Ladies and gentlemen, grab your popcorn, grab your favorite snack, grab your favorite cold beverage, because we have a podcast for you tonight. Welcome to the Lapdown Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Greg Farmer. And with me tonight is Valentino, Ben, JP, and Ryan. How are we doing tonight, guys?
Pretty doing good. What's great. Going on, everybody?
Pretty good. How are you?
Doing well. Ryan, how are you feeling there, buddy? I know you were a little bit under the weather yesterday.
Feeling fantastic.
Well, that's good. Sorry about your Red Sox there a few minutes ago.
Yep.
As always, a special thank you to the Alkali Project for writing our intro song podcast. Please be sure to check out their album, The Blood World, on Spotify and iTunes or wherever you get your music. Gentlemen, we are post-Martinsville, our third short track race in the last 4 weeks, if you count Phoenix. Bristol is a short track as well. So four in the last five, I guess you could say. It was a triple header weekend, Trucks, Xfinity, and Cup. On Friday night, Christian Eckes picked up the win in a crash-filled truck race. It seemed like they were having a caution every 4 to 5 laps. And as Brett Griffin said on Door Bumper Clear, I think Lane Riggs is still trying to finish the race as we speak. That man hit everything but the pace car Friday night. Anybody get a chance to see any of the truck race?
I did.
Ryan, you got any thoughts on it?
The fact that I can count the number of different leaders and even the number of lead changes on one hand is a problem. Yep. Especially with that many crashes and restarts, there should have been plenty of opportunity for somebody to take the lead and pass it back and forth. Eventually have somebody else win out on a restart, but just 3 trucks throughout the entire night for a total of 4 lead changes, I believe.
Sounds exciting.
That's insane, dude. That's really insane.
Yeah, it was.
They had one driver lead the first 2 stages in their entirety. So for the first 2 stages, it was one leader. And he ended up coming to pit road, handing the lead off to, I believe, Ty Majeski. Then somebody else led like 4 laps on one of the restarts amidst all the crashes. And then the original leader got back up there and won the race.
Yep. Speaking of the whole, Lane Riggs thing, everybody thought that he was going to shine Friday night because he's like one of those like short track aces, if you will. I heard he did really well in like the ARCA series and the grassroots late models and stuff like that, but during the truck race Friday night, it seemed like he bombed like really bad. I didn't really get a chance to see much of it, so I'm just speaking on what I've read and heard. So, if anybody can fill me in on that,
I can. I think Wayne Ridge, he is basically not as good as his dad was right now.
Wasn't his dad Scott Riggs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I don't know why I'm just now remembering that.
I think you're going to give Lane a little bit of time. Like he's just getting started off, a young kid.
This is rookie year.
Give him a little
series.
Bit of time, man. Yeah. Let him settle in. Yeah. I mean, he's running pretty good in this race. Pretty decent. It seemed to be.
Where did where did he finish? Do you know?
I'm loading the results right now.
He finished.
Your local Ace is the largest national retailer of steel. 38.
Wow, he must have gotten involved in an accident.
15th. Well, yeah. I mean, that's still respectable considering the amount of incidents that he was in that race.
I think he got pushed back with pit. So, you know, obviously the pits pushed him back a little bit as well. We had a far pit box in the back or something.
So, so on Saturday, we had the Xfinity Series race, and Eric Almirola picked up his first, I guess, real win with Joe Gibbs Racing in the 20 car, and won the Dash for Cash, the first Dash for Cash race. He picked up the $100,000 bonus.
Yes, sir.
I thought the Xfinity Series race was a little bit more tame than the truck race, except for that really big wreck on one of the restarts where looked like Brandon Jones missed a shift, and then everybody just kind of piled into him.
Brandon Jones.
Of course. Sees her money. I agree with that, man. The racing was really good. At the end, the racing was pretty good, but I mean, obviously, you said it was tame. I feel the same way, brother.
Yeah, but the other than Eric winning that race, the big story was Carson Quapel, son of Travis Quapel, making his Xfinity Series debut for Junior Motorsports in the 88 car. It was an important decision. I never started, but I do know that he came home with a fourth place finish. He drove a really, really good race, from what I heard.
Yes, sir.
Didn't make no enemies out there. He was showing a lot of respect to the other drivers out there, and in turn, they gave him a lot of respect. Top five in your Xfinity Series debut. That is 2 weeks in a row where someone has made their Xfinity Series debut for Junior and gotten it either a top 10 or a top five out of it. If you go back to Bubba Pollard at Richmond last weekend. Unlike last weekend with Bubba Pollard getting the highest finish for Junior Motorsports, the highest finishing Junior Motorsports car was Sam Mayer, who finished second. And then it was Carson Quapel and then Justin Allgaier rounding out the top five. So a good, respectable day for Junior Motorsports. It looks like they're getting ready to turn that ship around. What do you guys think?
I tend to agree. Carson Quapel really impressed me this week, not only because of the good run, but he did seem very at ease when they interviewed him. Post-qualifying.
He's got an exciting full lineup with Goosebumps.
So, he gets seem really at ease, like nothing bugged him all weekend.
Ryan, Valentino, or Ben, you guys got any thoughts?
I did not get a chance to watch the Xfinity race or listen to it.
Sorry, brother. I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm stupid. I was going to say, Carson Quapel, he had a great great weekend. Yeah, there you go. That's a tongue twister, but very happy for him. I think that if he gets a little more opportunity and a good machinery, he'll be at a finish well. But he's a good driver, and he's young, and he's probably a I'd put some stock in Quapel from now on. Buy some stock in Quapel for sure. He's a young driver. As long as
behaviorally, he doesn't end up like his dad.
That's all
I'll say on the matter.
Yeah.
Is that hopefully he doesn't end up like his dad in terms of the off the track incidents. Not to mention the on the track product, which outside of the truck series was never really there.
Yeah, that name I haven't heard in a long time.
Yeah, me either. It's been a while.
But there is one other driver in the field I wanted to make sure I gave a shout out to, though, after that Xfinity race, and it's the driver who actually finished 10th place in the race, Josh Williams, who's had a really rough start to his Xfinity series tenure this year with Colleg Racing in that number 11 car. And Colleg as a whole has been very much down from where they typically have been.
And they say you have 4 buggets in the plane.
But that 11 car in particular has been struck with pretty much every version of the cartoon anvil imaginable.
Yeah. It's good to see him finally get a good run and a good finish. But I mean, I just gotta say, I think it's like so cool to see Dale Jr., who's probably like the biggest ambassador for the NASCAR and grassroots racing, to give these guys like Bubba Pollard and Carson Quapel and Connor Zilich like these opportunities to, you know, even if it's just like a one-off thing, you know, go out there and be able to showcase their talents, you know.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
Like, Bubba Pollard, he may, I was listening to the Dale Jr. Download last week, and he had Bubba Pollard on the show. And Jr. said that he's gotten phone calls and texts from other team owners in the Xfinity Series garage that want Bubba Pollard to run for them, like maybe full time, but it all has to, you know, he has to make sure that he brings in a sponsorship to the team to get a full. But that's the thing, is like he had one chance to make a name for himself, or I mean his name was already out there, but like be able to show what he can do. And now he's got guys climbing and clamoring and clawing their way to try to get him to drive for them. And I just think that's so cool that Dale Jr. is giving these guys that opportunity.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to say one more thing about the Xfinity Series before we moved on. I was talking about Eric Almirola last week, saying that it would be nice for him to win a race. Nice to see him win a race in the Xfinity Series and do well in the Xfinity Series. And he won the race this week. So I really want to give props to Eric Almirola, who's rolled out of the Cup Series. You know, probably lost a little bit of confidence in himself a little bit as a driver, because you roll out of the Cup Series and wouldn't be doing well in the Cup Series for a while there, to come to the Xfinity Series and win a race. I'm really happy for Eric Almirola, a really nice guy, and great to see him in victory lane. I think he's going to win a couple more before he's all said and done.
Yeah. No, I met Eric at Charlotte back in 2015 when he was doing the stuff for the Air Force, when he drove the 43 car.
Yeah.
And in person, he's about as skinny and as lanky as I am, but he's a super, super nice guy. Like,
yeah,
he'll sit there and talk to you if he has the time. But going to Sunday, the Cup Series race.
Okay.
William Byron claimed his second Martinsville win in 3 years. His first win came in 2022, I believe. Was it 22 or 23 that he got his first Martins win driving the Raptor car? May have been last year.
I think it was 22. 23. 23.
But yeah, he got his second Martinsville win, his third win of the season, after COTA and the Daytona 500. And it was also the first time that Hendrick Motorsports or any team has finished 1-2-3 at Martinsville, with Byron, Person and Chase Elliott finishing 1-2-3, with Alex Bowman finishing, I think, 7th or 8th. So all 4 Hendrick cars in the top 10 Sunday. And it was also their 29th win at Martinsville as a team, which is the most out of any team at any track. And it just so happened to come on the day of their 40th anniversary. So that win was obviously really, really special. The big story coming out of Martinsville, guys, the short track package, still no passing, still no tire wear.
No.
I don't know if you guys saw it or not. Denny Hamlin was talking about it on his show. He got up behind Austin Dillon, the last car on the lead lap, and could not pass him. Like, couldn't even get up to his bumper to knock him out of the way. And they just rode behind Austin Dillon for 60 laps.
Oh, no.
And couldn't get past him.
Yep.
And at one point, Joey Logano stayed out and took right side tires only and was able to run 180 laps on left side tires.
Oh my goodness, guys just did. I think Hamlin's right. These cars just ain't like they're not as fun. Like when it comes to like the tire wear and the different like strategies, you can't use them in the race in most of these tracks.
I don't mind not having all that tire wear. I mean, it just brings more strategy to it. Got to be a little better at passing. Got to get a little more skill involved now.
But the problem is, if all the cars are too similar, it makes it hard that you can't just go and pass them. If your car is only like maybe a tenth better than the 30th place car, as in a 30th place car is going to be a pain.
Buy it and try
it. Yeah. My thing with the new package, I mean, with the shortcut package, is this. It's coming to Iowa Speedway, which is similar to Richmond.
Yep.
So get better start figuring things out because I don't want the Iowa race to be one and done.
Well, you won't see a change, I don't think, before the Iowa race. Certainly no major change. I mean, they might go and they might opt to go and run the intermediate aero package at Iowa because the speeds will be higher because of the banking, but that's probably the only change we can realistically hope for by summer for the Iowa race.
Yeah. But like, it's just like the big question is like, you know, we all saw what happened at Bristol with the tire. That was, you know, what they called a happy accident because nobody expected that to happen. Even at Richmond, you know, even though there wasn't like excessive tire wear, they were still having to pit every so often to get fresh tires, even though there was still technically no passing. But how in the hell did Joey Logano run 180 laps on the same left side tires and not have any fall off whatsoever? Like, that's what I don't get.
Yeah.
Wasn't it kind of cold outside?
I think they said it was in like the mid 60s.
So it wasn't extremely hot.
Too bad for a spring race.
Probably not hot enough to, you know, get the tires and start melting off a little bit.
Going back to the whole short track package though, and comparing it especially to the other short tracks at this point, and the big difference with Martinsville is that it is a true flat track. Because I know I've talked last week about how Richmond was a flatter track. But Richmond, you were able to make two lanes work. Now, it still didn't result in too much passing, but there were two lanes, so if you did have a superior car, you had somewhere to go, and it gave the lap down, the cars fighting to stay on the lead lap, a place to potentially move to not lose a ton of speed, but to also be overtaken. At Martinsville, there's one lane right around the bottom. And if you want to get by a lap car, you're going to have to probably move them off that bottom line because there isn't enough speed by moving up the track.
Yeah. But I mean, if you look back at like some of the older Martinsville races from like 2008, 2009 in the Car of Tomorrow, and even into the Gen 6 car, you know, they put on some banger races. You know, they were, you know, beating the crap out of each other and pushing each other up the track and passing and all that stuff. We didn't have that on Sunday. It's like Denny Hamlin said, you couldn't even heavy. Yeah, but like Denny Hamlin said, you couldn't even get to the back bumper of the car in front of you to even attempt to move them out of the way.
Yeah. Again, well, just we also saw what happens when you try and use the front bumper. I mean, look at what happened with SVG at the Circuit of the Americas road course a couple of weeks ago. I mean, you see how easy it is for a bump to go wrong as well.
Maybe they should just try to do intermediate, run some tests on intermediate package at these low, like these short tracks, and see how it does with the tire wear and with the handling and everything, just to see what happens. Maybe a higher horsepower.
Yeah, so my big question on all this, you know, obviously Phoenix is going to Phoenix, as we've said in the past. You can't really count Bristol because they run the intermediate package there. But looking at Richmond and Martinsville, two short tracks in a row and not much happening. And, you know, we have more short tracks coming later this year with Iowa and the second Richmond date and the second Martinsville date. The second Bristol, but still that's intermediate again, I believe. Okay. But is the new short track package just considered a failure at this point?
I think so.
I think so.
Honestly, I think so. I don't think if you see that there was no passing at Richmond, really, and there, I mean, you know, Richmond wasn't all that well, then I probably would have tried running the intermediate at Martinsville so that it wasn't as boring as it was.
Yeah, they probably need to switch over to intermediate until they get everything fixed.
And going back to a topic from last week a little bit, because I know we were talking about the potential of Richmond losing a date last week. I think honestly, I'd be on board for potentially seeing Spring Martinsville taking a bit of a year or so off before I'd be on board with Richmond going away, because at least Richmond, again, there's bias because I am a big Richmond fan, but Richmond Raceway, again, you could at least, there were two lanes that you could make work. Still didn't lead to a ton of passing, but it led to more than we saw this weekend.
For sure.
I do have a number, by the way, for total number of different leaders throughout the weekend. Anyone want to try and take a guess at the number?
For
all three races combined.
All three races combined, total number of different leaders, I would say... I'm going to say 8.
Between all three races?
Yeah.
I'll go
11. All right. You know, any guess there?
Let's say 10.
We're actually a total of 19 different leaders throughout the three races. In the truck race, 8 in the Xfinity, and then 8 in the cup race.
Okay.
Better than we thought, I guess.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, you know, I know we're talking about Martinsville, but if you look back to Richmond last week, look at someone like Alex Bowman, okay? He qualified 4th and was a top-5 car, and they were trying to play that pit strategy, and then it all got ruined by that phantom caution with Kyle Busch, you know, barely scrubbing the wall. And so suddenly that strategy's out the window. All of a sudden, Bowman is relegated to 17th, 18th, 19th place, and that's literally where he stayed the rest of the race. Like, he could not get any higher than 17th, and he was a top-5 car.
Yep.
And that, I mean, that is...
And that's not to say that Richmond is infallible. There's definitely flaws in Richmond, and I...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I was not trying to take that stance that, oh, Richmond is a perfect track and Martinsville's the worst.
Oh, no, no.
If I'm looking at those two and looking at cutting a short track race from the spring, I'd say I'd rather see another Richmond race than I would see another Martinsville.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if we're sitting here saying that the new short track package most likely is a failure at this point in the season, based on everything that we've seen in the last 7-8 weeks, where do we go from here? Like, what can be done?
Right now, I would say just run intermediate packages until they get it fixed.
How do they test new packages without at least without running them in races?
Is there a way of doing a simulation?
In my opinion, I think instead of changing to intermediate, they want to split the short track package. And they need to up the horsepower on the cars a little bit, in my opinion, to get them turning a little bit faster so they get a little bit more tire wear down, maybe make it a little bit harder on the drivers to get around, and maybe even give the drivers opportunity to get past people, you know?
Yeah. Well, they were actually discussing that on Dale Jr.'s show today, or whenever it was posted yesterday, but I listened to it today. You know, he talked to Elton Sawyer from NASCAR about the whole horsepower thing. And according to Elton Sawyer and John Probst, who's like one of the chief engineers of NASCAR, there is a lot more involved than just upping the horsepower and taking it to the racetrack. You have to build new parts like airflow, because there's going to be more air coming into the motor and the air ducts and stuff. You got to change the gearing and the transmissions, and there's like a whole laundry list of stuff that would have to be done to even add 100 to 150 horsepower. And you're talking about, according to John Probst, I don't know how real or valid this statement is, but teams would be spending upwards in the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, to make changes to these cars to increase the horsepower.
Well, and then that's where I go back to other quotes from the last couple of years, like guys like Jack Roush saying how they could have it wouldn't be much of a challenge to boost up the horsepower of these cars, and one would imagine that Jack Roush knows how to build an engine and what components would be involved with that. Denny Hamlin a couple weeks ago who said, like, oh yeah, we'd have more horsepower on the package by Bristol or whatever when we were at the Phoenix weekend?
Yeah.
That's possible.
I mean, I know he's only a team owner compared to Roush, who's directly an engine builder, but still, look at both of those quotes from guys who theoretically should know the numbers as to, one, how expensive it would be, and two, how difficult it would be, and both of them seem like it would be a achievable task, and at this point, I think you gotta try something, because clearly, aerodynamics, especially at the low speeds that we see at Martinsville, aerodynamics aren't enough.
No.
We've tried virtually everything.
Yeah, I personally think I agree with Dale Jr. and Denny Hamlin. Goodyear needs to try to build a softer tire. It's such a fine line because, you know, one, they need to get rid of shifting on the short tracks. That's a huge problem.
And
like you shouldn't be able to mess up getting into the corner and then just downshift and grab another gear and take off again like nothing happened.
Yeah. Well, and that's where that comes into a much bigger question, because that would be messing around with gear ratios and all that, and I'd imagine that would be tougher than trying to just add the horsepower.
Yeah.
Eventually.
But
I mean,
you know,
it's been a flaw with the car since its inception.
Right. But I think that, like, maybe a short-term gain on the short tracks would be a softer tire, because it would increase the wear and fall off. And, like, you know, like I was saying, you know, Joey Logano ran 180 laps on left-side tires, and he lost maybe a tenth or a tenth and a half on his lap times that whole run, which is insane. And you used to be able to, you know, at Martinsville back in the late 2000s and early 2010s, you'd start a run on fresh tires, and by the end of that run, you're falling off by 3 seconds because you're just tiptoeing around there.
Did they move the date on that race a little earlier in the year?
Let me see. What, move Martinsville earlier in the year?
Like from the... Oh, okay, I was wondering why you were lagging.
Moving Martinsville earlier in the year would be a bit of a challenge because you move it earlier, you risk...
saying that. Did they move Martinsville a little earlier in the schedule than they used to?
Yeah, a week or two, but...
Yeah, I was going to say
it's in April this year.
Yeah, I was going to say it's been pretty consistent the last few years. I think they moved it because of that race a few years ago where Clint Bowyer won on a Monday, or because it snowed on Sunday. So I think they moved it to like April a year later, and it's been pretty consistent in the month of April.
Nice.
So
What other
things you guys think could be done to maybe short term fix the short tracks?
The softer tire idea would definitely be a short term fix.
The softer tire, my worry there would be, would the fans, you'd have to tell the fans that, hey, don't be alarmed if you see another Bristol happen, because that was something I remember seeing a ton of, oh look, it's 2008 Indy again comments during that Bristol weekend where we had all the tires going down, and you don't want a repeat of that.
Yeah, but I don't remember seeing a single driver complaint after Bristol, though.
I don't remember seeing any, but I remember hearing in-car radio from my Denny Hamlin actually made the exact same 2008 Indy comparison during the race to his crew.
Yeah, well, see, the difference, though, between Bristol and the 2008 debacle was this time around NASCAR just let it play out, and the teams figured it out. They went from being able to only run 30 to 40 laps on those tires to running almost 60 laps by the end of the race. Back in 2008 at Indy, you had guys blowing tires every 8 or 10 laps, so NASCAR was intentionally throwing mandatory competition cautions every 15 laps so they could come in and change tires. And I've never seen anything like that.
I've never seen anything like it.
But, I'd say, when you factor in, though, I mean, you said what? They were making 8 to 10 laps on tires at Indy?
Yeah.
How many miles is that compared to the 30-lap runs they were making at Bristol in the early going?
Half a mile.
Pretty similar. On the
mile. Yeah, You're right, because Indy's what, 2.5 miles?
Yeah.
So that's what I can't math right now. 25-30 miles.
Yeah, so and 30 laps around Bristol is only 15 miles.
Yeah. But like I said at the same time, by the end of the race at Bristol, the teams had figured out how to go 60 laps.
They a little bit closer to the Indy number.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Yes, but I'm frustrated with this whole short track stuff. Like, you know, I think everybody
is. No magic button that fixes everything. Because again, softer tires I think would improve the racing. I think Bristol was the best of these four short tracks. You include Phoenix as one of them. I think Bristol probably was the best one, despite the tire issues.
Yep.
I do agree.
But I think I don't think we're the only ones.
You are up front with the fans and let them know, hey, there might be some high tire wear races, so if you see some blown tires, don't get alarmed. We are testing stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I think every fan, after seeing Bristol, were worried, oh, is that same tire problem going to affect the other two short track races on the season? And clearly, it didn't, and they were just testing something out at Bristol.
And you also had to factor in the weather, too, because, you know, it was, you know, cold that day, and the track was just not taking the rubber. So it was like super unexpected on all aspects. But no, I don't think we're the only ones that are frustrated by this. You know, obviously the drivers are. Like Dale Jr. said in his show earlier, like the time to hit the panic button was last week after Richmond, not this week. So
yep.
I don't know. Hopefully NASCAR will come up with something here soon and give us some better racing coming up to the next short tracks. But we're going to go into...
We have a bit of time before the next short track, because the next short track, I believe, is the Iowa race in July, so we have time.
Yeah, because we've got a mile and a half.
We've got North Wilkesboro for the All-Star race, actually, in May.
Oh, yeah. I was like, you know, in between.
We got Dover, I guess, is maybe a short track, but they're going to use the intermediate package, I believe.
And then you throw in the mile and a half and super speedways of Talladega.
Then you got Gateway in June, which might utilize a similar package. I don't know what package they're running there, because a 1.2-miler track, but in terms of banking, it's flat, similar to New Hampshire and Martinsville. June 16th, you have Iowa and New Hampshire back-to-back weekends.
Yeah.
Then in August.
Yeah. Well, anyways, we're going to move into green flags and black flags. Again, for our new listeners, green flags is something that we liked from the race weekend, and black flag is what we did not like. Ryan, go ahead, sir.
All right. Well, for a green flag, I will go ahead and shout out, I guess. Let me pull up the exact stats here, but go ahead and I guess for my green flag, I will go ahead and shout out some of the lesser experienced drivers being able to pull off pretty good upsets in the race. Elliott and Bowman, who hadn't really been relevant the last year and a half or so, both of them having dealt with injuries as well during that time frame, both looking right back to form. You got Bubba Wallace up there finishing as the best Toyota driver in the race. And even two of the four Stewart Haas cars managed to find their way up into the top 10 by the end of the race.
Yep.
Including Briscoe managing to lead eight laps on the day. So, yeah, and then continuing to the rest of the weekend, you also had, in the Xfinity race, as we mentioned, Carson Kwoffel with the top five and Williams with the top 10. So, I feel like that's a pretty good green flag to give. And then black flag, I'll go and shout out the lack of leaders. Only 19 different leaders on the entire weekend for a triple header. A track with this many laps, I think you should be at least 25 lead changes.
Yep. Valentino, what about you?
Yeah, so my green flags are going to be, if that's okay, can I have two of them?
You can have as many as you want.
All right, so my first green flag is going to be Eric Almirola. So happy for you, brother, for winning that race. You know, was pulling for you last week and just glad to see you win this one. So Eric Almirola, and my second one's going to be Chase Elliott. You know, he's crawling up, getting back to where he needs to be, finding his place. He's finding a way up there in the front and trying to get his nose up there to win a race here soon. I'm sure he'll be winning one of these races coming up. And my black flags is probably just going to be, you know, the tire work situation. And now there isn't much tire wear. And it just, I just want to see some good racing. And doesn't seem they have the track package yet, right yet. And like, they just need to get it right and keep trying. I know it's not, I guess it's their second year now into the new car. So I think they probably should have had it right by now, but
I think this the track the third package, year on, this is year three of the next gen car, 2022, 2023, and 2024.
Yeah.
Okay. Third year maybe new car, and I thought they started a new car in 23. But anyway, third year in a new car, I'm wrong. And so I just think they probably should have had it right by now, but you know, just trial and error. I think hopefully one of these days we'll have a decent package at these tracks and have a good race again and people bumping each other out the way. That'd be fun to see. But so far, the racing is my black flag just because it just wasn't as fan-liked as we would like. It wasn't as great as I would have liked.
Yeah. Ben, what about you?
Yeah, I would say my green flag's definitely Chase. He's been consistent. Bubba, he's doing good still. And just Hendrick as a whole. They got that win. They got, what was it, 40th anniversary thing. And yep, had special ruby red cars. And they had the 1, 2, 3, and then Bowman was an 8. And my black flags, again, like everybody else, it is the tire wear. NASCAR doesn't seem like they've been trying to make any efforts on acknowledging the issue or even trying to fix it.
Yep. Mine, I have a couple of green flags. One of them being Bubba Wallace finishing 4th on Sunday. Finally a good run for him. After the last few weeks. And two, the crowd at Martinsville, I heard, was pretty spectacular. Like, people showed up for that race, even though it was kind of a snooze fest, if you will. But my black flag, I'm not going with the obvious here, but my black flag is Denny Hamlin for being the only car in the top 10 to pit on that final caution on Sunday and being relegated back to 10th place and didn't even gain anything. He finished 11th.
Wow.
And that goes back to a thing I was going to talk about is how every team other than the Ford or Hendrick cars, like, they needed to pick a strategy and go with it. If the Hendrick cars were going to stay out at the front of the field, you need to bury everybody else on that back bumper with fresh tires. And if those 300 cars come to pit road, you need to bury them in as much traffic as humanly possible to try and hold them back, because they were better than everybody else.
Yep.
And ultimately, the field behind them being split, guys like Bubba, Blaney, and Logano staying out, meanwhile Hamlin and others coming down pit road. Ultimately, they ruined all of their shots to win it.
Yep. All right. So, next and final topic, we go to Texas this weekend. Mile and a half. Hasn't really produced the greatest racing in the last couple of years, but hopefully it'll be a little bit better this time around. What do you guys think we can expect from this weekend?
I think that the racing is going to – I'm hoping that the racing surprises us and there's actually some decent racing and it's not all spread out. But, you know, just with the last couple of weeks and just how everything's going, you know, a lot of people probably don't have too much confidence in how it's going to go. But I just got – I just got a feeling everything's going to be fine and there's going to be some decent race.
Everything's going to be all right.
I think it'll be better than Martinsville was.
Yeah, I agree.
I know that we've talked a lot about how that won't be a very high bar to clear, but I think they'll clear it.
Yeah, like Jeff Gluck was saying on the teardown the other day, he's excited for Texas, and he never gets excited for Texas. But, you know, after Martinsville, I think we're all kind of excited to get to a different track where we might actually see some real racing. Like I said, granted, you know, Texas hasn't really been all that great since the reconfiguration a few years ago. But, you know, who knows? They brought up, I don't know why, but they brought up IndyCar and said that IndyCar hasn't been great at Texas. I don't know what IndyCar they were watching, but the IndyCar race at Texas last year was freaking fantastic. I don't know if you guys watched it or not.
The IndyCar races at Texas had been progressively getting better basically ever since the repave, but yeah, the IndyCar races hadn't been spectacular up until about last year or two at Texas before they stopped going there.
Yep. Before we get into race picks, speaking of repaves and reconfigurations, did you guys happen to see the Twitter beef between Marcus Smith and Denny Hamlin the other night?
I did not.
I did.
Oh, man. So apparently there was a GT4 race at Sonoma the other day, and going into turn 11, they just repaved Sonoma.
Yeah.
And going into turn 11, the repave pavement started coming up, literally like just peeling up from the track.
Yep.
And Denny Hamlin or one of the drivers posted a picture of it on Twitter, and Denny Hamlin quote tweeted it and said, "When you repave on a budget, this is what happens. And I have a feeling that North Wilkesboro will be next." And Marcus Smith jumped in, who is the owner of SMI, who owns Atlanta, Sonoma, Vegas, Texas, Charlotte, all the Bristol motor
speedways.
Yeah. And they just engaged in this beef on Twitter where, like, they were just dropping absolute nukes on each other. Like, Marcus Smith was calling Denny, listen here, you almost champion, blah, 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 blah. And, like, it literally had the entire NASCAR world talking for the next 48 hours. Wow. Until they got on Twitter and, like, I guess you could say apologize to one another or something.
Yeah, it's like, that's crazy. You show me your trophy case and I'll show you a good reconfiguration.
Yeah. One of the things that Marcus Smith said, he said, I'll delete this tweet when Denny Hamlin does something. And Denny Hamlin replied, he said, "No need to delete. We've seen your reconfiguration record." And the most personal thing that Denny said was something along the lines of, "Don't take your dad's creation and destroy it like you already have." And I'm just sitting here like, oh my God, like what is going on? Like, it was the craziest thing I've seen.
Yep.
Dang. I forgot what track it was I seen recently that piece of the pavement ripped up.
I know it happened in Atlanta right before the repave and reconfiguration.
Yep.
I think it was
So Daytona started coming up in 2010 and they repaved it right before the 2011 Daytona 500.
Then in 2012 they went and tried to burn the whole track down. Thank you, Juan Pablo.
Yep, and then Texas, Atlanta, North Wilkesboro, and now Sonoma are the most recent ones that I can think of.
It must have been North Wilkesboro.
Yeah. Well, anyways, we're going to go into race picks. Jamie won, I believe. No. Who had Byron? Oh, no, I'm sorry. The dire curse is broken. Ryan finally gets a win with William Byron winning the race and jumped up quite a few spots. Unfortunately, Rumble is no longer making picks. Not quite sure why, but no hard feelings there. But as of now, Jamie with Mr. Consistency is our points leader, I believe. I'd have to look at my laptop. But yep. Ryan has the wheel with our names on it. Yep. And so he will spin each name, and we will make our pick out of the four of us, and then I'll get the rest later.
Yep.
So who's first on that wheel spin?
It goes to Greg. Greg has the first pick.
Okay. Let's see. We're going to Texas. Just to piss JP off, I'm taking Kyle Larson.
Because you know that was his pick, or that was the pick he wanted?
Yep.
He's been trying to claim picks by like Monday, the Monday after the race or whatever, and it's like way too early to be locking in a pick.
Yep.
Kind of like how I jokingly said I want to claim Eric Jones for the Darlington weekend ahead of Bam.
Yep.
Tito, you're next.
Okay, so I'm going to choose Chase Elliott.
All right.
And it's down to me and Ben. Am I really going to get last on the wheel again? I will get last on the wheel again. Ben, you're up.
Let's see. Let's go with... let's go with Byron.
Okay, so I guess we're just making this the Hendrick party.
Yep, and then Ryan...
I gotta spin it, make sure it's gonna land on me, even though I'm the only name left on the list. There we go, yep, it's me. Who would have guessed? I'm not gonna go within the Hendrick camp. I'm actually gonna go ahead and take Ryan Blaney here. He's had some pretty good Texas runs. I think this could be a track where the Fords could show up. And I think Blaney's championship pedigree plus his experience at this track, I think that bodes the best for me.
Yep. Speaking of Kyle Larson, I know we were talking about it earlier. They had their first day of Indy 500 testing, and he went second fastest in one practice and 12th in the other, I believe.
Yep. Before it all got rain shortened because rain came in, and that's what ended the practice session there.
Yeah. But not too shabby for his first time in a real live world IndyCar around other IndyCars on the same track.
Yeah. His teammate did mention how that lap time that got him up to second in that first session had a massive toe on it, so he was getting a lot of drafting help.
Yeah. Wasn't it didn't they say it was Rinus VK that he passed going into turn one?
I didn't watch any of it because I was in bed trying to rest myself up from whatever this is that I got.
Yeah. All right.
I don't go anywhere. I don't do anything.
Yep. Well, I guess that'll do it for our show. Again, thank you to all of our sponsors, Century PC, Sleafs, Fanatics, W Energy, Duke Cannon, Bulletproof Coffee. Be sure to click on those links in our podcast description.
Click them.
And be sure to tune in for a special episode where me, Ryan, and Valentino sit down with none other than the legendary Bob Pockris.
That yes, sir.
Will be coming shortly. But until then, I'm Greg. This is Ryan, Valentino, and Ben. This has been the Lap Down Podcast, and we will see you guys post-Texas. Deuces!
Deuces.